Welcome to Health Yeah, where experts from Stony Brook Medicine come together to discuss topics ranging from the complex inner workings of an infectious disease to tips and tricks for staying safe and healthy all year long.
Well, hello and welcome to Health Yeah. I'm Dr. Raja Jaber. I'm a family physician and lifestyle medicine enthusiast, and I'm part of the Department of Family, Population, and Preventive Medicine, where we have a small lifestyle medicine division. And today we're going to be discussing lifestyle medicine and discussing the six evidence-based pillars of lifestyle medicine now and how they can better your health and well-being. And before we get started, I would love to introduce my fellow experts. So we have here Asta and Anu, who will be joining us for the discussion.
Thanks, Raja. I'm Asta Matreja. I'm an internal medicine and preventive medicine physician, and I have board certifications in lifestyle medicine and obesity medicine.
Hi, and I'm Anu Paranandi. I am internal medicine board certified. I'm getting trained in preventive medicine and then also have a lifestyle medicine board certification. And lifestyle medicine is one of my passions.
Okay, great. So maybe you can start, Asta, by enlightening us about the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, what they are, why they are so important for us.
And so lifestyle medicine is evidence-based behavioral interventions that help prevent, treat, and sometimes even reverse chronic disease. It can help us live longer and healthier lives. And it's based on these six pillars, a whole food, plant-predominant eating pattern, avoidance of risky substances, practicing adequate physical activity, getting really good sleep, managing stress, and engaging in positive social connection.
Wow, that sounds really wonderful. Thank you. And I know that I've read that if people actually did practice all these behaviors, which is hard, but if we did, we would live 10 years longer without diabetes, without heart disease, without cancer, without any chronic diseases, which is absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to learn more about the first pillar. Anu, can you talk to us about what is healthy eating? What do we mean by that? It's so confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah, so nutrition is actually fundamental to good health. And as you mentioned, it prevents chronic diseases, prevents cancer. And really, it's all about your quality of life so that you don't have to deal with these diseases and you can live very well and fully. So in terms of healthy eating, what we mean by that is, you know, getting enough nutrition. So we're talking about macronutrients, which is basically carbohydrates, fats, proteins, and then micronutrients, which are vitamins, minerals, etc. And to get it in the right proportions in your body so that you can live that good life. And when we say, so how do we do that, right? How do we get the best, most balanced diet? Is to do a plant-predominant diet, which means that it involves a lot of fruits and vegetables. And, you know, by no means do you have to be vegetarian or vegan. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that you just need to include a lot of fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, whole grains into your diet so that your body can actually flourish. And to minimize things like salt, to minimize saturated fats, and to minimize the processed foods. So then what do we mean by processed, right? So we want to get in our bodies food that is in its most natural state. So for example, a carrot, as it is, it's the raw form, is perfect for your body.
Not carrot chips.
Exactly. Not carrot chips, because that is so far removed from what the natural state is. Some foods, of course, you're not going to be able to consume that way, like potatoes, for example. So you do have to process it a little bit. So like steam it or bake it or whatever. But now if you're going to deep fry it and it's fries, that's really that's super processed. And that's what you want to stay away from.
And also mostly what you buy, packaged food, fast food.
Yeah.
All very highly processed.
Highly processed.
So anything that you don't cook yourself essentially is processed food. And then if it's highly processed is when you look at the ingredients, you don't recognize any of the ingredients.
Right.
They're not
right.
real food. So that's kind of what makes it very highly processed.
Right. If
and
it's
unfortunately...
preservatives in it, et cetera. And like you said, you don't recognize what it is that's in there.
Right.
Then yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So when I talk to patients, you know, saturated fat is so kind of nebulous. What is saturated fat? I tell them it's really mostly cheese.
Okay.
So most people eat tons of cheese, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where there's a lot of saturated fat. And then there's like in the beef and in like the skin mm-hmm. of chicken and essentially, if you want to avoid saturated fat, if you want to avoid it completely, then you eat completely plants. So like olive oil, nuts, seeds, beans, lentils, vegetables. That would be like no saturated fat at all.
Right.
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 But except for coconut oil, which has saturated fats. Right. That's mm-hmm. the only one from plants.
Which we would want to limit.
Right.
The coconut oil.
Yeah. Right. Right. And of course, like you said, limit process, but process means sugar as well, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the sweeteners, the artificial sweeteners that we put in our food, because they change our gut microbiome.
Right? Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So sugar is bad, but people are replacing it with all these zero sugars everywhere, right?
And yeah, which is actually, even though it sounds good, is not, because it is exactly.
And it's so sweet. It makes people crave that sweetness because it's like so much more sweet than regular sugar.
Almost addictive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, so if people could change a little bit, like how many meals based on beans would you tell them to do a week? Like, you know, because some people, like you said, are not going to become completely plant-based. It's hard. And sometimes it's not comfortable. And people want some chicken, want some fish. Fish is good for them.
Yeah.
So how many times a week would you tell them to eat beans or nuts or things like that?
I would say for beans, I would say 3 to 4 servings. You can start with that and increase it as you tolerate
right.
that a week. And, you know, people can do beans at every single meal. It's not bad to do that. By no means are you going to have trouble with that.
So I think, you know, one of the things people are always asking, you know, what kind of diet should I follow? So a whole food, plant-predominant eating pattern can really help with reversing disease, preventing disease. And that's what, you know, we really like to educate our patients about and also practice ourselves, tell our families about and those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, we know that such a diet would lower your cholesterol, would decrease your heart disease
right.
Risk, would decrease diabetes tremendously. Mm-hmm. I mean, really tremendously, like up to 90%. It's really very powerful if we would practice all the pillars. But in particular, the nutrition that you're talking about. But how does it impact other diseases? Does it impact cancer? Do we prevent cancer? Do we prevent cancer recurrence? Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So food is actually a great medicine for preventing cancer, of course. But it also, if you are diagnosed with cancer, it helps with your cancer care journey. So it helps, you know, while you're going through chemotherapy, it helps with just your quality of life during that process. And then it prevents the recurrence after you're considered free and clear from the cancer. And so, you know, what is it about food that makes it such a powerful tool against fighting cancer is that there's a lot of kind of a technical term that, you know, phytochemicals, phytoestrogens, there's all these components or chemicals within food. It's naturally occurring
within
chemicals.
Plants, you mean, within plants.
Within plants, I'm sorry. Right. Within plants that actually fights cancer. And can reduce inflammation, reduce the formation of cancer cells. And so having a good diet, having good nutrition, really, it's a powerful blow against these cancer cells. So it's important to kind of keep that in mind in, yes, preventing cancer, but also if you were to be diagnosed and to fight cancer itself and prevent recurrence.
Which is wonderful. And yeah, I tell my patients that plants are our ancestors. They develop all these phytochemicals to defend themselves from disease, and then
That's
they
right.
transmit it to us so we can defend ourselves.
That's
so
great.
Plants are wonderful because actually food is information to our body, right? Mm-hmm. And the information, these phytochemicals we get from plants, they actually change the expression of our genes. So they can increase the anti-inflammatory expression, decrease inflammation in our genes, and improve our cancer-fighting property genetically. And that is absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad you mentioned the phytoestrogens. These mm-hmm. are weak estrogen that are in plants that kind of replace our strong estrogen at the receptor sites, and therefore our cells do not grow as much because the weak estrogens don't stimulate us as much as our strong estrogen. That's really important for women with breast cancer.
That's right.
Estrogen receptor positive. So plants have very interesting properties. And of course, most of the phytoestrogen comes from soy and beans, and a little mm-hmm. bit of soy is okay. People
yeah.
used to think mm-hmm. should have
that it was
more
right.
soy. Yeah, and these have very amazing properties. And the thing that kind of increase growth, and you want to avoid growth in cancer, mm-hmm. is mostly these animal protein. So a lot of animal protein, people who eat tons of animal protein will promote growth. And we don't want to do that in cancer. We want to lower growth. And these plant phytochemicals actually have property to stop growth, inappropriate growth, let's
right.
put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful balance that we can achieve by eating more and more plants.
That's right, especially if you are going through the cancer care journey and you are fighting cancer.
Right. Or you have a strong family history, you want to prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do have a program, right, that you're developing for...
That's right. That's right. So we have a program that we're piloting, or it's in our clinic, and it's basically lifestyle medicine and breast cancer care.
Okay.
So it's women who've been diagnosed with breast cancer anywhere in their journey. So it could be that, you know, they were just diagnosed versus they've gone through chemotherapy, surgery, et cetera, and now they're just trying to prevent recurrence. So either, you know, in any stage, we see these women and we kind of formulate a lifestyle medicine plan, taking into account all of the six pillars so that they can live the best life possible. And, you know, and part of that, obviously, is the nutrition.
And
aspect.
Is this like a group program or individual program?
So we are seeing patients individually at the moment, but it, you know, we are planning to expand it into for seeing patients in a group.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. wonderful. Thank you, Anu.
Yeah.
That's so informative.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's so powerful about something like this is it gives patients something to do that's in their control,
right.
You know, and that's really what's so lovely about lifestyle medicine is that there is very little risk in trying this, and the benefits are just, you know, they can be so impactful in helping you feel better, in helping your disease, it's something that can be just life-altering as well.
And thank you for mentioning that, because taking over control is so important. In the past, people would like finish treatment and would be actually always scared what's going
right.
to happen next,
mm-hmm.
right? But now when they adopt the lifestyle program, they are actually doing something for things not to happen. They're not
right.
just waiting,
that's
which
right.
is actually incredible.
It's empowering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we thank you for all of this. And I would like to see... Talking about breast cancer, and we're going to move to the next pillar, which is avoiding risky substances,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the pillars. And how does it relate to cancer and overall, and then in general, why is it so important in lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, so generally for risky substances, what we're really focused on is tobacco, so smoking or any sort of use of tobacco products. And then alcohol use. So those are the two kind of things that we concentrate on. Now, it's kind of well known that smoking or tobacco can leads to lung cancer, but it really is linked to numerous other cancers, head and neck cancers, bladder, et cetera, et cetera. So really, it is a carcinogen and something to definitely be avoided. And I think it's been getting out there more and more people know about it. But what I wanted to concentrate on is our alcohol use. So alcohol really is a carcinogen. And I know it's, you know, having a glass of wine with dinner, et cetera, that's actually fine to do. And I'm not trying to, you know, put that message that it's all bad out there or anything like that. But it just to be mindful of the benefits versus the risks of it, especially with cancer, especially with breast cancer, because even moderate use of alcohol. So, you know, moderate can be defined as for women, one drink a night or, you know, seven drinks in the week that would amount to. So even that is too much for breast cancer, for example.
So there is a link. There is a link.
There is a link. That's right. So the more consumption of alcohol there is, there's a higher chance of actually having breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just to think about that, just to be mindful. Again, I'm not saying that stop drinking or, you know, I'm not trying to be so.
But if people can stop, that's fine too.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I just, but I don't want to, you know, not trying to make it about fear. Yeah. It's just about being very careful about your habits, really.
Right, right. Yeah. The worst is smoking, like you said. Everybody should stop smoking.
Yeah, there's no moderation in that one.
And of course, all the other substances, like, you know, other drugs, drugs that are linked to all kind of overdoses. But we're not going to expand on that in this particular panel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of risky substances out there.
That, yeah, to be careful of.
That,
right.
Yeah, kill people in their, actually in their midlife. That's where most people die from it. Alcohol is mostly linked to car accidents in younger people. Yeah, but.
And alcohol, of course, has other health effects, not just for cancer.
Right.
You know, heart disease, cholesterol, a number of other.
Liver failure, cirrhosis. Right. Yeah, it's
so
really bad.
It
and
is
colon cancer, very much linked to colon cancer as well. Yeah. Excessive alcohol consumption. Yeah.
And we know it's a toxin because as soon as we ingest it, our body starts trying to get rid of it.
Right.
It's not really giving us nutrients. And so minimizing, you know, those things that our body doesn't need is really the goal here. And it is a process, you know, in sort of changing those habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no doubt we are all creatures of habits. So sometimes people feel like singled out when they have a bad habit.
Quote unquote.
But we all have bad habits.
Right.
Some
right.
of us don't go to sleep. Stay
when
up all night.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us watch too much TV.
That's
some
right.
people eat too much. Some people drink too much. It's all a question of habit and developing healthier habits, letting go of the habits that are hurting us and developing better habits. And that's where all the science of behavior change comes. And we'll talk about it later.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Anu. Well, thank you so much for this very interesting discussion about lifestyle and nutrition and risky behaviors. And now we're going to be talking about exercise. So thank you both. And we'll be right back to talk about exercise. Well, welcome back. And we are going to move now to our next pillar, which is exercise. And we have our exercise expert here. So I would like to introduce Marita. And Marita, please introduce yourself.
So I'm Marita Marzano. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I am board certified in lifestyle medicine. And I am finishing up a PhD in lifestyle as well.
Yay! We are all excited. So tell us more about
So physical activity is one of the lifestyle medicine pillars that is very important. It mostly is revolves around exercise, right? So we have physical activity, which is any activity that keeps you moving around. Could be like house chores, gardening, those kinds of things. And then we have exercise, which is a formal form of activity that is set out with an intention to exercise and do things like that get our heart rate elevated. We have a lot of guidelines on physical activity. So the guidelines generally recommend 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise. So moderate intensity is usually judged by talking but not singing. So you can talk in short sentences, but you cannot sing because you're that out of breath. That also recommends strength training.
So examples of this moderate exercise would be walking really fast or...
It usually would probably require walking on an incline if it's going to be walking. Or it could be a light jog, running, it could be cycling, swimming, you know, anything that gets our heart rate up and makes us a little out of breath.
That's why I like the talk test, because for some people that is walking on a flat surface if they're going
right.
tense enough, or if they just don't really exercise as much and they're just starting out. But it's such a good gauge, because as you get more efficient, you're going to have to move up the intensity.
Right. Yeah. You will have to increase the intensity as you go. I
just want to highlight, because we didn't really mention it in the discussion on cancer, exercise is such a great modality to help prevent cancer and prevent recurrences of cancer as well. So I just wanted to highlight that before I let you go and proceed.
Yeah. So exercise in general prevents a lot of things. It keeps our heart healthy and strong, right? Our heart is a muscle. So every time we exercise and our heart rate goes faster, it's getting stronger. So exercise fixes a lot of things. It helps prevent heart disease. It actually is better at fixing depression and anxiety than some of the medications that we use. So it helps with a lot of things, also cancer. But back to what kinds of physical activity is required, in addition to the 150 minutes of moderate intensity, they also like a portion of that to be strength training. So anything that helps build our muscles, and that is often done, it can be done with body weight exercises, but is sometimes done with dumbbells and lifting heavy things. A lot of people think that we need to stop doing that as we get older, but that's not true. We need to keep exercising and keep strength training as we get older. It's what keeps us independent as we move into our older age. A lot of what helps us to stay out of requiring assistance when we get older and out of facilities is our independence, is our ability to walk to the bathroom and get ourselves on and off the toilet. So things that keep us doing those things, like functional movements, that stuff like squatting is a very functional movement. And all of these things can be modified. So we're not expecting everybody to just get down and get back up again. We can modify these things using chairs and other modalities that make it easier and more accessible for everybody.
I know in Stony Brook, talking about all these things as we get older, we have some excellent program. We have a Tai Chi program, which is available to like everyone and everywhere. It's free. It's on Zoom.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful program. And Tai Chi help a lot with balance. Yeah. And so people actually, when they do Tai Chi and they get older, they don't fall as much.
Right. I'm so glad you brought up Tai Chi, because balance is another important aspect of physical activity. Tai Chi is great for that. Yoga is also really great for balance. People don't realize what makes older people more at risk for falling is the fact that they can't catch themselves when they slip, when they trip over the rug, or when they miss a step. A lot of younger people are able to catch themselves because they have good balance. But as we get older, we lose that and we aren't able to catch ourselves. So doing things like yoga and Tai Chi a few times a week really helps us to stay safe and healthier as we grow into our older age.
Yeah. And your discussion about strength training, I think, was so important, too, especially because a lot of, you know, some people are just never told to lift weights, you know, especially young women. And when we're young, that's when we're building our bone health. And that's so important as we get older. But we don't really get that guidance, you know, in our teens and our 20s.
Women lifting weights is getting better, but it wasn't always a very strong recommendation. But we know now, because of osteoporosis and the risk that that poses, how important strength training is, because it helps prevent osteoporosis and can even build bone density. We actually have a program, right, that does that. We have an osteoporosis group visit where we sit down with a few patients in a setting and we talk all about osteoporosis, how to prevent it, the nutrition and activity that goes along with it. And a lot of it is strength training, and it's getting people that are postmenopausal to lift heavy things.
And of course, you have to go slowly, right?
You have to go slowly.
I can't jump into these heavy weights. Yeah. And that's why we have a program with our physical therapy department to kind of transit people to that heavy weight lifting, so they can actually then maybe find somebody to help them with heavier weights. Because like you said, that kind of strain against the muscles pulling against the bone makes like bone formation.
It is easy to help to hurt yourself if you're not careful.
Right.
So we do usually recommend for people that are doing this for the first time to do it with a professional. And a physical therapist is a great option.
Right. Yeah. And there's programs online for that. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about our Lifestyle Medicine website at the end because it has a lot of resources.
A lot of resources.
So we'll mention it at the
end. It'll have community resources and virtual resources. People that are, we think, are competent for leading other people in exercise virtually. And because a lot of people have to do the virtual option for financial reasons and transportation reasons, when I tell people that have to do the virtual option, I usually recommend they do it with a mirror, right? So I usually have them have the virtual video in front of them and also a mirror so that they can look at the video and then look at themselves because they need
idea.
To make sure that they have good form when they're doing it so that we don't injure ourselves.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
That's wonderful. And like you said, like all of these exercises not only would prevent diseases like heart disease, strokes, hypertension, cancer, osteoporosis, but they also keep people fit. So like knee arthritis, which is like old people are like handicapped because of knee arthritis as we get older. If we keep our muscles strong, our glutes and our quadriceps, we're less likely to develop knee arthritis.
Yeah, our muscles keep our joints in place,
right,
and support them.
And we lose muscle as we get older, right? So our muscles get weaker as we get older. And that's so important to fight with good nutrition and exercise. So this is like such a important.
So important.
As you sort of
passionate
about exercise.
And I wanted to say, because I know that the recommendations, the guidelines say 150 minutes, but any exercise is good exercise, even if it's just 10 minutes a day. And there
Absolutely.
Are studies that show 10 minutes
shows better than zero.
It's better than zero.
Right.
So any exercise is good exercise. And we don't always have to meet all of the guidelines, right? Lifestyle is not about being perfect or doing everything. It's about doing a little bit of everything.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes I tell people, like, people are like, don't want to walk this half an hour. I say, walk 10 minutes after breakfast, 10 minutes after lunch, 10 minutes after dinner. So we can modify it for people so that can fit their needs.
Yeah. Right. I love the modification. I always tell people, even when they're injured and stuff, to not get out of the habit of doing it. Go and do your exercise, but do it modified in how you can do it, not with
You could do
pain.
It on the floor if you can't stand up, right?
Because getting out of the habit is what gets us into trouble sometimes,
Right. Yeah. And you didn't mention the resistance bands. I just want to add it because some people don't have weight, but they can get resistance bands and you can get a lot out of it.
There is a lot of modifications we can use, a lot of very inexpensive props to help us achieve the mobility and independence and strength that we're looking for.
And you can find so many workouts just online, so that just makes it so much
easier. There's apps too. Yeah. And in a lot of the apps, you can plug in what equipment you have and it will spit out what exercises you should do.
And your level.
And you're
a beginner, so I always tell people to start at the beginning if they're a beginner and then slowly work their way up.
And we have a lot of these apps on our website.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of resources on it.
And one thing I want to say, people are so, trying to exercise for weight loss. I just wanted to clarify that because it's great at maintaining weight loss. It helps you jumpstart for weight loss if you're going to exercise a lot. You have to do at least an hour a day if you're going to use exercise to help you lose weight. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing of exercise is that it makes us lose our belly fat. Mm-hmm. And belly fat is what creates a lot of the inflammation. And exercise is probably even better than nutrition to make us lose that belly fat, which is so important to prevent diabetes and heart disease and all kinds of things.
Yeah. It improves our overall body composition. And that's where, a lot of people, are just so focused on the number on the scale, but it's really about, your ratios and how much muscle you have. Like we said, we love our muscle. We want to maintain our muscle. And that's why exercise is so important.
Yeah, we don't always need to be thin, but we want to be strong.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Marita.
Yeah.
And I think we should move and talk about sleep, which is another pillar, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that I want to transit is that exercise helps people sleep. A lot of people tell us that they sleep much better when they exercise.
Yeah. And people will say, I can't exercise, I'm too tired. But it actually does give you energy and makes you sleep better.
Absolutely. That is so important.
But I think the energy part is what so many people struggle with. I mean, I think every day, I think most of us see patients who complain about being tired.
And my first question when you're complaining about being tired is, how much are you sleeping? And oftentimes people are not sleeping enough, or they're not getting restful sleep. They're waking up a lot in the middle of the night for various reasons. And so, you know, I tell people that sleep is so important to get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep each night to make sure that when you're waking up, you're feeling well rested. We know that we need sleep because we know when we don't sleep, we're tired, irritable, we're more hungry. You know, it affects our mood, our stress, our cognition, our memory. Yeah, exactly. So we spend quite a bit of time in our lifestyle medicine appointments talking to patients about their sleep.
Yeah. And so what can people do to improve their sleep? Like, so some people can't afford, I think a third of our population have problems sleeping. So it's so common,
yeah.
You know, because between falling asleep, not staying asleep, people who have sleep apnea, which is a big kind of epidemic because unfortunately we are quite overweight as a population and that's kind of linked to sleep apnea, but not all the time.
Right. So I think, you know, step one is just assessing what you're doing before bed. You know, that may not be helping you sleep. Just like we have a routine when we get out the morning and go to work, we need a routine when we go to bed. And you got to kind of treat it like your job. You know, you make your coffee in the morning, you brush your teeth, you get out, you know, you make breakfast, lunch, go. You need to do the same wind down procedure. And so talking about sleep hygiene is really important. Some people still struggle, you know, and they've been struggling for a long time with insomnia. So that's where we can employ strategies and programs like cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, which we're so lucky to have a program here at Stony Brook that does that. And then evaluating for sleep disorders like sleep apnea or upper airway resistance syndrome.
Yeah, we have a great program. Dr. O'Brien at Stony Brook has a cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia, which is actually the most effective for chronic insomnia.
Yeah.
It's learning how to approach sleep. So many people are so worried about not sleeping, right? So going to bed, they have all these worry thoughts. They're constantly thinking, oh, I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to be tired tomorrow. And it's all these thoughts actually prevent them from sleeping.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a great program to help them approach that differently. And we refer a lot of our patients to Dr. O'Brien. And sleep is very important for our health, right? Is it important for cardiovascular disease? Can you tell us more about why is it so important?
Yeah. So, you know, we have so many important functions that are linked to like adequate sleep. When we don't get that rest at night, our body never relaxes. It never calms down. You know, so that's where sleep apnea has been linked to like high blood pressure and arrhythmias. And so that is why screening for that and treating that, if we do find that, is so important. When we don't get restful sleep, our immune system, you know, it doesn't work as well. And then lack of restorative sleep, which is that slow wave sleep, which activates our glymphatic system, which cleans out some of the, you know, the waste in our brains. That has been linked to poor cognition and even dementias.
Right. So this is like a new system they discovered, kind of like drains all the toxins from your brain. Yeah. It's like this lymphatic system that gets activated when we sleep deeply and it cleans all the toxin, this tau protein, all these things
that
accumulate.
Toxins that are specifically associated with Alzheimer's.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very important for our cognition and for our brain health to get that all of our sleep cycles, right? We have to reach all of our sleep cycles.
Yeah. Yeah. So even like lack of sleep is linked to diabetes, right? There's increased incidence. So every disease is kind of influenced by whether we sleep well or not.
Yeah.
And one of the things that improves slow wave sleep, that deep sleep, is actually exercise. So, and actually our next pillar that I would like you to talk about, which is stress reduction, relaxation, because that also improves our slow wave sleep, right? Because most people don't sleep because they're stressed out, right?
So yeah. Turn off that inner dialogue.
Right.
That's oftentimes when I talk to my patients and they say, I can't sleep. I said, is it because you're not tired or is it because you can't turn off that inner dialogue that's running in your brain? And most oftenly, it's because they can't turn off that inner dialogue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, you know, stress management. Stress and lifestyle are so closely linked, right? When we're stressed, we're not thinking about practicing healthy behaviors or health habits. And so it kind of is this vicious cycle that we wind up in. And so employing stress management strategies is important for sleep. It's important for reducing diseases that are linked to high levels of stress, like cardiovascular disease, like high blood pressure. Because increased stress, is linked to increased inflammation. Stress is not a bad thing, but what we're struggling with, it protects us. Our stress response is supposed to be protective. It's supposed to get us out of danger. But when we have chronic stress that doesn't go away, that's when it can harm us. Mm-hmm. That's when we're not able to adapt to those stress. So everybody has stress, but it's about learning how to not get stressed by the stress. So I often tell my patients that. So we have so many things, on our website to help with stress management. And it can be a mindfulness-based practice where you're meditating or using prayer, exercise, cooking, spending time with loved ones, all of that. Can help with stress management and figuring out what works for you before you enter like a highly stressful state, I think is so important because you have to practice that muscle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they've done a lot of research on that, right? The stress response produces a lot of cortisol, increases inflammation, increases adrenaline. And then if we learn to develop the relaxation response, which is the opposite of the stress response, then we stimulate our vagal nerve, we lower our adrenaline, we lower our cortisol, we lower our inflammation. And that has been found in research. And even that relaxation response changes our gene expression. Again, the same genes that produce inflammation are shut down. And we become healthier. So it's so important.
Yeah. And that mindfulness-based research really showed that our telomeres are longer.
Right.
When we practice mindfulness and we have less stress. So it's been shown, it's been proven it works. And,
right.
And working on that and incorporating that as part of your healthy lifestyle is so important.
Yeah. And as mentioned, we have so many resources, but I find that truly that's the hardest thing for people to develop.
Yeah.
Amongst all the lifestyle pillars, I find that's the hardest thing.
Well, I think sometimes when people think of a mindfulness practice, they think that the purpose of it is to turn that inner dialogue off. Mm. When the purpose of it is actually to just recognize that it's happening and to pivot to something else instead. So it's training your brain to turn off that inner dialogue. And it's an exercise. It's a practice. So every time we recognize that the inner dialogue is taking over and we pivot to whatever else it is that we're concentrating on, we're doing a rep of that. And that's making that practice stronger. And it's going to make us more able to turn off that inner dialogue when we need to, when in times of sleep and that sort of thing.
Yeah, decreasing how we react to it.
Exactly.
And knowing that we don't always have to react. Yeah.
Right. And this is so important. I teach this to medical students and they all are surprised by the fact that it's okay not to shut your mind off because nobody can shut their mind off. But to get that presence, right? Which we're talking about noticing, it's like a presence, mm-hmm. right? But it's a non-judgmental presence because people sometimes say, oh my God, I'm thinking again.
Yeah.
I can't stop my thinking. So they notice, but they're angry, right?
Yeah, but it's not the purpose of it.
So the idea is to notice with kindness, to notice and smile and to let it go and to do something else like wash the dishes or brush your teeth or smile to yourself, right? And then the thoughts come back and then we notice and we smile.
Yes.
So this is like this non-judgmental moment-to-moment awareness is so key and so beautiful. Yeah. So this is great. Yeah. So, yeah. So we're moving on.
Yeah.
So linked to that whole stress, right? So we can't avoid stress. So things happen to us apart from our own perceived stress, right? Catastrophic things happen in life, right?
And it builds resilience, right? So
right.
Resilience is also important. So stress is not always a negative thing. It helps us to build resilience, to be able to recover from traumatic events that are inevitable because life is full of that.
Right.
You're never going to be able to avoid that,
right? And that resilience is beautiful and we can cultivate it. Some of us have more genetically more resilience than others, and that's really true. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it can be cultivated. And I mean, mindfulness is one thing to cultivate it. But also what helps a lot in resilience is your support system, right? So people can be exposed to the same amount of stress and have no support system. They really get diseases. They get very ill. Mm-hmm. people have the same amount of stress, but they're surrounded by loved one, have a great support system, and they do better. And now we know that from research. Even people who have a good relationship with their doctor do better because it's a kind of a support system.
Yeah.
So tell us more about like social connection and why this is another important pillar of lifestyle medicine.
So loneliness specifically is actually associated with disease processes. So it has been shown to be equal negative predictor as smoking, as obesity, as hypertension. Yeah. So we need to move away from loneliness and build really strong social connections in our lives. Another good point is that the research has shown, right, we've done some research with the Harvard Happiness Study and the Blue Zone studies, and what we know is that things and money don't make people happy. People make people happy. Mm-hmm. The relationships in our lives is what makes people happy. It's what makes life worth living. So we need to invest in those things. We need to invest in those people. And our relationships in our lives are never always smooth sailing, right? They are sometimes full of events and stress and ups and downs. And the research actually shows that that's okay. But what has to be there is mutual respect. So you can go through these ups and downs where you have disagreements. And when those come, as long as you treat each other with mutual respect and you attack what's happening as a problem that you're trying to solve together instead of the other person, that is what builds nurturing, strong relationships. And that's what keeps us healthful.
Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful you mentioned the Blue Zones, because the Blue Zones is like this research which looked at people who lived the longest on life. But and most of these people ate together, right? And talked together and spent time together and socialized. And so, but what can people do who don't have this strong familial tie?
Yeah, right now there's a big disconnect. All of those things are decreasing, right? So I think it was the Gallup poll that showed that the amount of families that are getting together to eat dinner at night is decreasing. The amount of clubs and social gatherings that people are doing are decreasing. And this is a problem because that's our social connectedness. So what can we do to fix those things? Mm-hmm. We want to show the people that love us and we love that we love them. We want to nurture
remember
to tell them. We want to remember to tell them. We want to. The greatest gift we can give people is our undivided attention. And so we have a lot of things in today's society that is distracting us, and we're not giving our loved ones our undivided attention. Mm-hmm. So doing things like phone-free time, making sure that we're having family dinners and putting the phones away so that we're giving the people that we love our undivided attention is really important.
That's also true. And I just want to add that for people who don't have a lot of very strong, close ties, there are support systems in the community that they can join. Mm-hmm. There's senior centers, there's programs in the libraries that we always encourage our patients to attend, right? Mm-hmm. There are support group for people with chronic illness, support group for people with Parkinson, for the families of people with Parkinson. And these are so helpful. People really get better. They're bereavement groups. And so there's all these things. They're volunteering opportunities.
Yeah. So actually giving and being able to be of service to other people is another thing that makes people feel connected and happy. So when people do volunteer and give to others, then it makes them feel more fulfilled, right? It gives them purpose. When we have purpose, we live longer because we think that we're needed. On our website, again, is lots of resources for finding volunteer opportunities. And there's actually a website that will show a list of volunteer opportunities so that you can pick and choose which one is better for you.
This conversation is amazing, but we had to end. And yes, if you Google Stony Brook Medicine, Lifestyle Medicine, you'll find our website. It's filled with a lot of treasures. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for all our experts for everything you added and informed us with. And thank you for our listeners. And I would like you to remember the important takeaways from today's discussion. Eat mostly unprocessed food, things that you can cook yourself. Cooking is also movement, so you will cook and clean the dishes and eat maybe more plants, both more vegetables, a little bit more beans and lentils, a bit more nuts and seeds. Move a lot. Move a lot in your home. Try to move all the time as between work and home, but exercise, do something to increase your heart rate, to strengthen your muscles, deepen your sleep, smile, smile to yourself, smile to the world, take a deep breath, let go, and have great conversation and great social connections and feel better and live longer. And thank you.
Stony Brook Medicine is Long Island's premier academic medical center. We transform lives through scientific discovery, education, and care, and we bring together innovative research, advanced education, and extraordinary healthcare expertise to set the standard for how healthy communities thrive. For more information, visit stonybrookmedicine.edu or follow us on social media, Stony Brook Medicine on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and Stony Brook Med on X.